Hello, friends, and welcome to a golf podcast unlike any other. This is Fairway Rollin' on the Ringer Podcast Network. I am your starter, Joe House. Every week on Fairway Rollin', it is myself and our PGA Tour correspondent on the ground, Nathan Hubbard, talking all things professional golf, amateur golf, amateur betting, professional betting, amateur drinking, professional drinking, my birdie buddies. If you want to hit them straight out there, please check out Fairway Rollin' every week, available on Spotify.
It's the Ringer NBA show presented by FanDuel. The road to the NBA Finals starts now, and FanDuel is the best place to get in on the action. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Quick Bets, which are back and better than ever for the NBA playoffs on FanDuel. Find out what you're looking for faster and easier with more props right at your fingertips. You can check out live bets like three-minute markets and exclusive live bets like quarter player props, player assist combos, and more. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 years and older, 18 and older in D.C., and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Weekends on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Big Waz, a.k.a. Wozni Lambre, and I'm joined by a very special and esteemed guest, formerly of the Milwaukee Bucks, now of The Athletic, my man, the guy with the wettest jump shot in NBA media, Seth Partnow. What's going on, brother?
There's not video proof of mine like there is for Lee Ellis, but I think it's accurate.
Super accurate. This man has range out to 30 feet. I promise y'all, I'm not lying. I didn't know they had basketball courts in Alaska, yet here we are. Okay.
That's some serious Trajan Langdon erasure going on right now, but okay.
Shouts to Carlos Boozer. Man, I'm so happy that I was smart enough to ask you to come on the day after this Bucks-Celtics game, because I know you're watching this series with a very keen eye, as are the rest of us. And man, just a good old-fashioned Eastern Conference slobber knocker.
That is the correct word. It's NBA playoffs started and then the hockey game broke out.
So, man, I saw this stat floating around the internet per cleaning the glass. On first shot attempts, the Celtics had an 82 offensive rating and the Bucks had a 76. That is insane half-court defense.
Yeah, it's... I think we knew that about both these teams. I'm frankly a little surprised that the thing we thought coming into this series was the advantage Boston would have on the wings with Chris Middleton out. And Milwaukee isn't outplaying, isn't even really totally matching them, but they're blunting the advantage. I mean, Wes Matthews is playing Jason Tatum not to a draw, but again, he's not getting killed. And if you'd have told me before the series that it would swing on the fact that Wesley Matthews can guard Jason Tatum straight up, I would have asked you to have your head examined. I do think that Boston and Tatum in particular are playing into this a little bit. Their Boston, especially earlier in the year, had the tendency to kind of, you know, flatten out the floor and, you know, almost play James Harden-esque offense with Tatum at the top. And if it's just a situation like that where Wes Matthews can kind of be physical and doesn't have to navigate screens, doesn't have to chase a guy around, like he has that. It's just if you're making him, like, you know, run off screens, chase you side to side, you know, his mobility isn't what it was, and so that would be where Boston could get some advantage. But I think, for whatever reason, Boston hasn't consistently done that when that's really been a characteristic of their offense for, you know, the last couple of months of the season since they've been on their tremendous run.
Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes when your half court offense is sputtering in the way that Boston's did, and again, it's not like they're playing, you know, they're not playing the Hawks, right? Like, they're playing a team that has established, not just over the course of this year, over the course of about four years now, of defensive excellence and dominance, right? So you would expect that they might run into some trouble in the half court, and you would just hope that Boston, to goose their numbers and efficiency, could get something done in transition. And they have just been horrific, especially yesterday. And it wasn't for lack of trying. They were getting out in transition. They just couldn't convert.
In fact, I'd say their poor offense is almost, I mean, you were just talking about, like, Milwaukee's struggle, to put it mildly, to score in the half court. But if you give up, Milwaukee had 9 steals yesterday, like, you know, live ball turnovers are a pretty good way to get Milwaukee some easy shots. And in a close game, you know, turnovers and offensive rebounds, sort of, this is not a, you know, I didn't flippantly make the hockey reference because in hockey, it's like, you know, it's shots on goal is sort of the team that wins the shots on goal battle, because they're all low percentage, but you take more of them will go in. And that's a little bit where this
What's
year,
happening.
Like,
yep.
Yeah. And certainly in games 1 and 3, game 2, Boston was just like, made a lot of shots and played much better. But certainly in games 1 and 3, it was very rock fightish.
Of course, we're damn near 10 minutes into this and haven't mentioned, you know, the elephant in the room or the freak in the room. But Giannis was incredible yesterday. And which, you know, at this point, it's kind of what we expect out of the guy. The first two games, straight up, Boston did what they needed to do. They got stops, and specifically, he got his shots off in the restricted area and didn't convert. They were bothering him. The length was bothering him. His timing was a little off. Like, I was like, wow, like, Boston has done as good a job as I've ever seen somebody do, basically, in recent times, defending what Giannis does so expertly, which is get buckets around the basket. But I just had a feeling like you can't count on keeping the biggest monster in the paint, in the game, out of there and stopping from converting. And I thought he reverted back to more Giannis stuff, where it says dude was 10 of 15 in the restricted. By my count, that's pretty damn good, Seth.
I don't even think Boston defended him poorly. There was just a lot of, you know, like, Grant Williams, I think, is doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there was
banging.
There's a lot of banging. There's a lot of banging. This is maybe the best part of, like, 90s and early 2000s basketball we're getting from that. And that's enjoyable. But Boston's making it tough on him, but if he, you know, you're one of the top 2 or 3 players in the game, they can make it tough and you can still score. I do, like, you know, not to be like this, as is my want to sort of pump the brakes a little bit. I do wonder, depending on the length of Chris Middleton's absence, if Milwaukee can ask this of Giannis for this in 2 more series. You know, that's like, he was like he had, he, like
he was gassed.
Yeah, like this is that like he wasn't like he didn't get into the 40s easily. He had to work for it,
yeah.
And you could tell he'd had to work for it. And you know, maybe that doesn't take cumulative effect this series, but you know, presumably, like if they see Miami next round, it's going to be a little more of the same. More, and then whoever they play in the finals, you know,
yeah,
as if they get through that, like you know, bang up against Draymond Green or DeAndre Ayton. Actually, like Phoenix might even have the, as good as Phoenix is, they might have the fewest bodies to throw at them almost.
Yeah.
But
I'm not crazy about Ben Smacked Biyombo and JaVale McGee's ability to, you know, do
stay
spot
in front.
Duty. Yeah. When Ayton inevitably picks up two quick fouls on Giannis. Like, and that, you know, that became a problem last year in the finals, but we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. So Giannis comes out just three rounds from now.
Yeah.
Giannis comes out and in the third quarter, he's basically dominant. He was a plus 14 in the quarter by himself. He just, you know, dominated. They get out to a really big lead. And it feels like Boston is dead in the water. They inevitably come back, take the lead. I'm somebody who thought that Boston would win this series in about six or seven games. I just thought they had more advantages to press because of the Middleton injury. What do you think they could be doing more of going forward? Because again, this game was there for them to take it, even though they went down big in the second half.
Oh, I'll freely admit that with the Middleton injury, I picked Boston in five. Mm. Like I, you know, oh, that's, and that, that's
you disrespected Giannis Antetokounmpo, yeah. Seth. Say sorry now.
No, yeah. Disrespect. Like that's another rant for another time. But no, like two teams enter, one team leaves. You're not disrespecting the team. Like you got to pick one. It's not like it's, you know. I think they're both very good. One has all their guys. The other doesn't.
Yes,
it's disrespectful to point that out. Okay, whatever. No, I think that so that like. I think some of it, like Tatum almost, and I'm going to make a weird comparison because he's a much better player, I think, but there's a, like Tatum's almost carriage is a little too reminiscent of Karl Anthony Towns. He seems a little like too amped up.
Wow.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah. Like not to the extent of like Towns where he like basically took himself out of the play-in game by like being so like, I'm going to go make something happen and run something. But Tatum is like, he's very like, you know, he's always been like gesticulative, but he's very like, and just like, banging his head against the wall of Wes Matthews and not, you know, when he's been at his best, you know, over the Nets series, over the latter half of the season,
he's taking what the defense is giving him.
Yeah. He's been patient and surgical and, you know, you have to give credit to Milwaukee for making that hard on him. But I think he is also falling into the trap of I'm going to run through this instead of I'm going to work around it and we'll go second side and get some good over there. Then the ball come back to me and now Wes Matthews is closing out on me. And now like, here I go. I do think that there's one name, like you said, we hadn't mentioned the elephant in the room. I thought you were going to go Brook Lopez.
Mm.
He's been so dominant
in the freaking paint. Whenever they try to attack in there, it's like they're banging their head against a brick wall. Like he's been so. I remember we talked to Zach Harper up here, and he was like, "Man, I'm a little bit worried about the Bucks because their defense just hasn't been there this year." And it's like, "Yo, they haven't had Brook Lopez.
Their defense had back surgery,
bruh." The second this fool comes back, they're back to just dominance again. And yesterday, like you just mentioned, was very, you know, illustrative of that.
Yeah, I think that there's a micro point about how like important Brook Lopez is to the Bucks defense. I think a couple years ago, when the year that Giannis won Defensive Player of the Year, I didn't have a vote. But if I had one, I would have voted for Brook Lopez for Defensive Player of the Year.
Wow.
And I think and I think you're seeing why, but also I think he is indicative of how, you know, the trend across the league of teams starting to play bigger. And they have kind of this space eating like center who can man the paint and then an athletic four who can kind of run around, destroy everything. Cleveland had great success with that this year. During the regular season, Memphis, and they've kind of completely gotten away from it for, you know, understandable reasons, though. I think
it's legitimate that Steven Adams can't chase Steph Curry around.
Yeah. But you're sort of seeing, like, you know, you're seeing, like, there's part of the reason, like, Jaren Jackson's always in foul trouble is he fouls 50% more often when he's playing without Steven Adams, when he's playing the five. Like, that's demonstrable this year. I wouldn't crunch the numbers. It's like 3.9 per 36 with Steven Adams and 5.4 without.
Yeah, like, that's a material difference.
Yeah, and for a guy who's spent some important time on the bench. But the point is that like anchor big it's kind of something we've moved away from a little bit. And I think maybe the job requirements are different than they used to be, where it could have just be like, you know, Roy Hibbert or Kendrick Perkins or whatever. Sure. Like these guys are much more mobile. Like that feels like a weird thing to describe about Brook Lopez, but his like small space agility and his ability to, my colleague, our friend Eric Name, wrote a great article about a month ago, I guess, the one this year was Drew Holiday, where last year where he like interviewed Brooke and put it over video of Brooke talking about like his knowledge of the rules and how he could position himself and what's coming and where he's got to be and stuff like that. And so even if he's not like as physically fast, his reading of the game and his mental speed allows him to make up for that. And then just, you know, being big and in the way is pretty good.
He's so huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is some of my favorite stuff because, and people don't remember this, but early on in Brooks' Brooklyn tenure, his defense was a fucking complaint. Like, people were like, bruh, this guy kind of stinks at defense. And he made himself into one of the best guys in the league to the point where you're like, no, like he's played defensive player of the year caliber defense. And we always forget, like in the playoffs, you know, people are trying to get those advantages. And the best shots are the shots closest to the basket. You learn this shit the first day you pick up a basketball at 6 years old, right? And if you have a guy who was making those shots extremely difficult, not just to make, but to get off in the first place, you know, that's of, you know, incredible value in the postseason.
Yeah, and that allows, you know, part of the reason, like, we've been giving Wes Matthews his due, and he deserves every bit of it, but part of the reason he, you know, he can take the risk of being, like, you know, up and under a guy who's quicker than him is he knows, all right, I got the 7-footer behind me, and behind him we got the other guys. So you know, there's plenty of help. You know, the times where I do get beat, so I'm just gonna push up as much as I can, and he's not getting that pull up off.
Yeah, this isn't Utah where guys are just like, no, let me just not have any resistance. And literally the only other good defensive player on this team is Rudy. It's like, no, there's two defensive player of the year caliber guys behind Drew fucking Holiday. Okay, like this, it's a problem. It's a problem, and I think you're seeing that in Boston. Like, these numbers are sort of speaking for themselves. Jason Tatum, 4-for-19, obviously on its face is horrible, but like Seth mentioned, when you're watching the game, this shit is difficult. Like, he's not getting easy shots, right? Like, this isn't coming within the flow of their offense. And it's like, oh, they ran some action to spring Tatum free and he's getting something up. Like, he is working for everything. He's on the ball. He's initiating pick and roll. He's doing so much freaking work. And some of these shots were good looks that just, you know, didn't go down. But a lot of them were of high difficulty. Again, like, I think people look to Jaylen Brown because basically the thought was like, when his matchup isn't Drew Holiday, these should be guys like Grayson Allen and Connaughton and even Wes Matthews that the guy should be able to take advantage of. And he hasn't really been able to, you know, cook as much as we thought, you know, outside of game two. However, Al Horford, my God, this guy is incredible.
Remember when we thought he was washed?
Like a genius. Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh God, Brad Stevens doing the Doc Rivers shit. Oh, let me go get all of my older players, bring them back because I know them and I love them. And, you know, I feel comfortable and I feel safe when I'm in these guys' hands. And I was like, I don't know about this Horford thing, man. Like, I think there was a reason you guys could go out and get him. But he's been a damn godsend this playoffs, and especially against the Bucks.
No, I mean, he gives, you know, you've talked about Grant Williams doing it. Like, him and Grant Williams are the two guys who have been able to at least, like, bother.
Manage.
Yes. Yeah, like, yep. Like, Robert Williams doesn't have the quickness and probably plays a little too straight up and down. And, like, whenever he gets on, like he's just way too big for Tatum and Brown. And then on the other end, like, sort of one of the things, and going back to when he was in Boston the first time, like, when we played them in the playoffs, and that was when I was with the Bucks, when we played them in the playoffs, there was a little bit of, all right, well, this is going to be our coverage, and we're going to make Al Horford have to shoot it every time. Like, we know Al Horford can shoot it.
But he doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to.
And he's like Marc Gasol in that way.
Yeah. And he has been, at least I think he's sort of okay. Well, we're not getting everything else we want, but this shot is open, so I'm gonna let it fly. And that was a big part of, like, he was great in the fourth quarter yesterday. That was a huge, like, he was the second best player on the floor for long stretches that game. And so that's been, you know, that's been one of the really, like, interesting things about the series. And this, again, why you think both these teams are good is, like, Boston has six guys that can step up at any given time, and they just haven't had enough of them in two of the three games.
Look, I picked Boston before the series. I still think they're in pretty good position. They get this game four. They'll have two more home games. I think if they could get game four, they're still going to win this series. But essentially, and I hate being a sports media must-win game guy, but game four is a must win.
I don't think they can count on making jump shots three games in a row if they need to win three games in a row. And that's, you know, like, if there is a flaw to this team, it's they are, you know, they've got a couple guys who can shoot feet set, but they don't have, you know, they don't have a Seth Curry. You know, they don't have just that guy, that wing guy who is, you know, high volume knockdown. You can break a team out of that sort of very crunched in defense that Milwaukee, that very physical and crunched in defense that Milwaukee is playing. In game two, they did a great job moving the ball quickly side to side, but I think Milwaukee did a better job containing in game three also.
This episode is supported by State Farm. Man, I remember when I first got into a car accident, it was pure frustration because I did not have State Farm. And now that I do have State Farm, it is an exclamation of pure joy. But the only words that you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visible Wireless. Want a wireless provider that always brings its A-game? Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. And as if that wasn't already a huge win, you could use promo code RINGER20 to receive $20 off your first month. Just for listening to us talk about basketball. Not bad, right? You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com and use promo code RINGER20. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. 'Tis crunchy yet soft. 'Tis filling yet has a hole. 'Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's, huzzah, a toast to breakfast.
Yeah, and, you know, Marcus Smart, who's an important player for them, just hasn't gotten it going. Yesterday was a bit of a nightmare for him. I guess we got to talk about those last few plays. I think it's obvious that was a shooting foul. Everybody agrees with that. Even on the on the, I'm so happy they did the purposely missed the free throw. I think that's the chance you should be taking in that scenario. It ends up working. And he got fouled again. However,
you can't call that. You can't call that.
Exactly. And also, Marcus Smart is the boy who cried wolf. I'm sorry. I love that the refs don't give that fool the benefit of the doubt. That's just me. This isn't an anti-Boston thing. I just think the fucking, the acting and the tomfoolery and trickeration that these guys are doing to the refs, the job is hard enough. I want to see the refs start going, look, man, if this shit ain't obvious that somebody like Marcus Smart or Chris Paul or James Harden got hit, I'm not calling that shit. And I think on the last play, I'm happy that they swallowed their whistles.
I mean, I don't, you don't want to, like, both fan bases, judging from, like, my Twitter mentions, were not happy with the refereeing. And I think, I frankly think with some justification. I thought it was, I didn't think it was lopsided. I thought it was uneven. Just in, gotcha. Like, in the space of a couple minutes, like, Jaylen Brown, like, gets a pretty soft foul call where he kind of lost the ball and Girardi may have tapped him on the arm. And then like two trips later, Giannis hammers him. And there's like, and there's a lot of that just both ways where the inconsistency and the amount of contact, that was a foul. So I don't think it ultimately, other than, you know, maybe Marcus Smart should have had three free throws. Okay. Marcus Smart should have had three free throws to tie, but I thought it like was, it was balanced, just like inconsistent and frustrating. But it's a hard job, and as I was talking to Mo DeKeel about this, and he made the point, like, I would hate to ref a Giannis game. It's like it's the equivalent of Shaq.
Yeah,
because there's just so much contact.
So, and here's the thing about Giannis too: it's like he does get brutalized, but man, boy, does he do a lot of work with that off arm. My God, dude! So, like, to me, he's drawing even on that because he does. Clubs people in the fucking chest with his big ass forearm. And I'm just like, bro, what the hell is Robert Williams supposed to do when he's just being freaking assaulted on damn near every drive? Like, it's ridiculous what's happening. So I'm completely fine with how that's being called. Like, Giannis, he's dishing it out. He's getting it. I think those are basically at the end, you're getting an even distribution. I still think Boston ultimately, man, like, if they can be better than an 82 or 76 rating in the half court, they can win this series. It seems like that's attainable, Seth. Like,
it does. So this is, you know, I don't want to say it's a benefit that Middleton is out, but one thing it is doing is like, okay, Drew Holiday and Giannis each took 30-something shots.
It's a must.
Yesterday.
Has to happen.
But so, okay, that's the offense. All of you other guys, you're playing defense.
Yeah.
And that sort of is allowing, okay, well, then this is, you know, I'm not worried about getting, you know, Wes Matthews not worried about getting, you know, spot up three and doing the bow and arrow. He's just you know, I'm on offense and I'm still thinking about the next time I'm going to smack Jason Tatum in the chest.
Yes. So we could just wrap this up. What do you think Boston can do aside from just make a couple of shots? I don't know that there's anything that they can do rotationally. I seen some shit out there. People saying Derek White might need some more run. I don't know. I mean, like at a certain point, like.
I think they can set some screens higher up the floor because Boston, like, Milwaukee's ball pressure is so extreme that maybe they can kind of get that sort of half court fast break thing going.
Get rolling downhill, yep.
Yeah, either like, you know, set a screen. The old
Miami Heat LeBron joint where they would set the screen like 5 feet away from the three-point line so that this dude could get ahead of steam. I think Jason Tatum definitely needs some of that.
Or even in the backcourt. Just like something to get like something moving towards the basket with a little more speed. I gotta give tremendous credit to the Bucks coaching staff because you look before the game, it's like, where are advantages coming from? And they looked and they're like, okay, Boston's really good, but you know what they don't have? They don't actually have a lot of team like straight line speed. So we can get up into them. And it won't hurt us as much because like the only guy who's really like a burner is Jaylen Brown, and he's not the surest ball handler under pressure. So it's not like, you know, you pressure up on Trey or something like that. And it's right. like, well, he's gone. And then we're,
yeah.
Boston doesn't have that. So I think that was a good identification of where they might be able to have an advantage by Milwaukee's coaching staff, because it's been very clear in every game. Like, they are picking up at the opposite free throw line whenever possible. And, you know, that also, if you're not asking, you know, Wes Matthews and Pat Connaughton and Grayson Allen and Javon Carter when he's in the game to do anything on offense but stand in the corner, they can do that. They can pressure 94 right. feet. So I think this is, you know, there's a good job of making the best of what they have, certainly.
So I want to get you on the record. You're picking the Bucks to go to the conference finals? You're flip-flopping on your pick?
I mean, three games have happened, so it's like, you know, even if
you've got good information.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Right?
I mean,
instead of guesswork.
I mean, the difference between needing to win, you know, three is greater than two, and Boston needs to win three games, and Milwaukee only needs to win two. And so, even to the degree that I thought before the series that as available, Boston might have had a better team, better roster, they're not that much. They're not a full game better. Over four games. So that's that, you know, obviously it's advantage Milwaukee. But again, game four, that swings back pretty hard the other way. Like, it's game four is going to be like, you know,
yeah,
it's kind of a must win for both teams, frankly.
Yeah. I love the way you put that. I just have to believe Boston can play better. They can play like closer to their form after they went down by damn 16 points. I really do think they're going to ultimately pull it out, but it's going to be hard. And this is what we love about the postseason, watching these young guys figure this shit out, figure out a way to win this damn knife fight. I really think Boston is going to ultimately be able to do it. I just think, like, they just have the clear, if not decisive, talent advantage. And I'm always going to think talent is going to win out overall. I really do think Boston's going to find a way to get game four. They're going to have the two home games in their back pocket and ultimately get to the third round. But it's going to be, it's basically Gotti versus Mickey Ward. Just think of any just boxing match where the two guys
ain't gonna
are
be
wailing
no rematch.
On each other.
No. Ain't going to be no rematch.
No. So, Seth, man, let's get you out of here. Tell the people where they can find you and your incredible work, man.
You can find me on Twitter at Seth Partnow. I'm writing. You can listen to me on Nerder She Wrote every week, but this week, since I'm in Spain, on the Athletic NBA show. Read me a couple times a month at the Athletic, and buy my book, The Mid-Range Theory. Audiobook just came out.
Let's go.
I'm working on the updated, the introduction to the updated paperback edition now, and that'll be out in the fall. But if you can't wait, paperback and e-readers version still available anywhere books are sold online.
I love it. Yeah, go get The Mid-Range Theory. You jokers are listening to podcasts. Y'all can get the audio book. Jesus Christ. Thank you, man. Thank you for coming on and doing this. I know you're not even in the country and you're doing your thing. So thank you for taking the time. We'll see you guys next week. I'll see you guys on Wednesday on group chat with Justin Verry and Rob Mahoney. We're out of here. Peace.